Hi! If you're a fan of Nonprofit Lowdown, you might be interested in my weekly free newsletter where I send out weekly inspiration for fundraising, notices about any upcoming events that I'm doing, and a cute dog picture. So check it out at rhegawong.com, rhegawong.com. Welcome to Nonprofit Lowdown. I'm your host, Rhea Wong.
Hey, podcast listeners, Rhea Wong with you once again with Nonprofit Lowdown. Today, I am speaking with my friend, Robert Bercui, about the business of running a nonprofit organization. Robert is a former Fortune 500 executive who is a marketing and sales expert, but is now focused on helping family businesses run and is particularly interested in helping married entrepreneurs succeed. He wrote a book with his wife, Tandem, about the married entrepreneurs, but we're not going to talk about that today, but I thought it was particularly interesting. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rhea. Just really looking forward to it. I've not talked about nonprofit issues at all, at least publicly like this. So this will be fun.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Let's start from the beginning, because you and I connected through a mastermind that we're part of. And we got talking because you actually are a board member yourself. And you were talking about how you had some frustration with folks who ran nonprofits and didn't realize it was a business. I also had the same frustration oftentimes when I talk to new founders. I'm like, you know, you're starting a small business, right? They're like, no, I'm starting a nonprofit. I'm like, these are not different things. Let's start from there. Feel free to rant, friend.
Yeah, no kidding. It's almost like if you say the word business in a nonprofit environment, it's like a four-letter word. No, it's like this reflex. No, we're not a business. And I said, business is really a generic term, right? It's not specific to for-profit or nonprofit. And in fact, your nonprofit organization is a corporation. The C between the 501 and the 3, the C stands for corporation. Whether you like it or not, it is a business. It's just that you're doing things a little bit differently because you have a specific cause, a social cause, and a really specific social impact that you want to make that's slightly different from business. But even that's changing because their business, even in for-profit world, they realized that you really have to be able to be intentional about giving back to the community and the people. It's not all about the bottom line. If all you do is focus on a bottom line, because customers' views on business is changing too. They want to identify with a brand or do business with a brand that has a cause, that does more than just make money. And so if even on the business side, if you don't realize that the impact that you make beyond the bottom, the profits, if you don't realize the impact that you make is more important to your consumer than making money, then you're not going to be in competition very long. I've been on as much as I think 8 or 9 boards. And I think that's like the bad habit I've had. And it's one of those things that my wife and I, Kaylee and I, have had discussions about, because I'd come home sometimes and I'd say, hey, I just joined another board. And she's, what? It's like bringing home a lost puppy. She's, what? Another board? Because I said, such a heart for these people. And especially in the beginning, the boards I was joining, they're very small nonprofits, a startup in business, but small nonprofits, and they're struggling. I felt I could lend my experience in business and building things and sales, because fundraising is like sales, basically. I felt I could bring some kind of level of expertise to help these nonprofits grow and thrive. I just had a heart for that. And when I got asked, my reflex was yes.
Let's talk about this, because I think this is so interesting. You're a sales and marketing expert. And often what I see, again, I don't want it to come off as I'm beating up on my nonprofit colleagues, but often the marketing and the fundraising are seen as, you know, the redheaded stepchildren to the program. And that is the mission. Is that something that you've seen? If so, what is your response?
Yeah, there's a tension there, especially in smaller nonprofits that don't have a fundraising director and all that kind of stuff, that they realize it's important. Obviously, they need the money, obviously the income to do the mission, but their focus is on the stuff. And they're not very intentional about fundraising. And of course, everybody knows that the money is the lifeblood of your organization. You need the money to do the mission, right? Otherwise, you're just doing things for free and you're not going to be able to do it very long and very well. The money's not the goal, but it's the essential part of building the organization. And if you're not intentional about developing relationships with your donors, with new ones and also your existing ones, you're just going to struggle. And that's why the small nonprofits are the way they are right now, is they're not focused. They're not being intentional about the fundraise. There's a board that I did not join recently, because I was vetting them out. I got smarter, especially with all those multiple discussions with Kaylee about another one. So I decided to cap my board seats at just five organizations. And so I've whittled down from, I had as much as 7 at one time. I whittled down to 4. I think I'm at 4 right now. And now I vet. And I vet it with a nonprofit. I'm vetting the nonprofit based on my values and how does it fit me? Does it fit what I want to do in the world? Not just because they're a nonprofit and needs help, but does it fit? Does it align with me? There was one I was just vetting out. He'd asked me so many times and said, let me look at this thing. I was just helping. Basically, I was consulting him for pro bono for a little bit. It's basically what I was doing. And he's telling me all these things they're doing, all these projects and stuff and all, but we don't have the money and all that. And I said, go fundraise. And he's like, I don't have time. I said, okay.
Then it's just a hobby, right?
About this to the cows. Yeah. Exactly. They're going to be talking about this cows at home. So you've got to carve out, you've got to make the time to go develop donors.
Yeah. Oh my God. I could go on and on this particular topic forever because as my number one thing is I help people fundraise. And what I would say is I think it has to start first with the attitude of the executive at the top. If they don't value fundraising, if they see it as like an annoyance in their day, if they don't understand that it actually is the lifeblood of the organization, that trickles down to everybody. And I often had folks, and usually it was program people who thought of fundraising as like this dirty thing that like they didn't have to do, but they could be pure in the program. And I was like, how do you think you get paid? Like, how do you think we pay for the material? How do you think this office gets paid for? Fundraising. I wouldn't spend too much time here because I feel like we could go down a rabbit hole, but what is the relationship and orientation to money that you think is helpful versus harmful in the nonprofit sector?
That is a great question because as you're talking about that, that's the first thing that popped in my mind is these nonprofits just have a really distorted view of money and profit, basically. It's like, oh, it's not about the money. It's not about the money. It's about the mission. You're right. So that is the goal. Although right underneath that, what funds the mission? And so there is a misnomer or misunderstanding about nonprofits that you're not allowed to make a profit, basically. That's the attitude that a lot of these nonprofits have. It's like making a profit is like a dirty word. And I remember sitting on this one board and the director came out with the budget for next year. And she's like, here's the projected income and expenses. And at the end of the year, we're going to have no money at the bottom line. There's no profit. And she's proud. And I'm looking at this thing going, so we're not going to put any money in the savings. We have no money left over to improve that software, improve the website, hire more staff, give raises, put more money into the organization so it can grow and be healthier and do the mission better. Because the IRS does allow a 501c3 to make a profit. It's this misnomer like, oh, you're not supposed to make a profit. That's bull. It's not that you can't make a profit. It's a 501c3. There's some restrictions on what you do with the profits. Right? For-profit organization, you do whatever you want. You pay shareholders, investors, all that kind of stuff. For a nonprofit organization, you just have to keep the profits within the organization. It has to be reallocated into the organization to grow a healthier organization. So hiring staff, giving raises, improving software, getting more equipment, yada, yada, yada. The list goes on. You know, as you're listening, thinking about what are all the things you need in your organization to build it and make it more healthier, more sustainable, more efficient. That's all going to come from the bottom line. Because right now, you're just running on what you have, whatever your expenses are, that's what they are. But all the additional things that you're wanting and you're wishing for, that's going to come from the bottom line. And so not to be in love with money, but you have to have a healthy view that it is the lifeblood of your organization. It's necessary. You don't think about money, just like even when I talk with my for-profit clients, I say, don't think of their sales number as just a number. I said, think about how many customers that you're helping. Because in general, in business and nonprofit, the same thing, you're providing a product or service, a solution to somebody else's problem. So the money, the sales in a for-profit circuit, it's not so much money. It represents a customer that you're helping. Even like with in a nonprofit, for every dollar that you bring in, how many people can you help? Or whatever that formula is, right? For each person that you help, how much income does it take to help them? I forgot what organization it was years ago, but they had that commercial is 30 cents a day feeds a child for a month kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you put the dollar value to a person. You got to think about that. And not enough nonprofits really do that is put how much money does it take to serve one person?
To play devil's advocate, like I agree, impact numbers are really important. I think what is harder to measure is intangible impact, right? So it's very easy to say, okay, 30 cents a day feeds a child. What might be harder to say is, what is the impact of feeding a child? What is the impact of this one child living? And I think especially for like policy organizations, this is a really hard thing because their horizon is like a 10, 20 year horizon. What is the impact of changing this particular policy? That's much harder to quantify, I think. Let's go back to something that I hear all my nonprofit people say. Okay, Robert, I hear you, but also I can argue a couple different things that when we look at for-profit ways in the nonprofit sector, and I experienced this myself, it's not quite apples to apples. Let me give you an example. When I had my budget, I would go to my board, we would talk about the revenue, we talk about the expenses. But because a lot of my for-profit board members were coming from the perspective of selling stuff, they're like, okay, what can we expect this quarter? It's not quite so simple. I can't go out and just sell more widgets, right? It's really about what is the cadence of people giving. So it's usually like last quarter is when 30% of the money came in. It's very susceptible to economic climate. Right now, I know a lot of nonprofits are feeling the pinch because we're in a recession, and that's where a lot of their donors are cutting back. Talk about how, as a nonprofit, we can think about evening out the vicissitudes of a market.
Yeah, even just in the for-profit circles, there's similarities because not all business is the same, just like not all nonprofits are the same. And there's seasonal issues and there's environmental issues, there's political issues, there's tax issues, there's all kinds of stuff. For your organization, you just, all the things you outlined, yeah, let's lay that out. There's certain things we can't expect, like when do donors donate the most? Statistically, it's like that Christmas season. That's the biggest season for fundraising, right? And it's usually the last day is the biggest push, right? For people to want to make sure they're giving so they can get a tax deduction for the next year and that kind of stuff. Certainly economic issues, you plant those certain things that are relatively expected. And then the unexpected is, yeah, when there's a recession, because nobody can forecast that. But that's also why you need to plan for that. So again, talking about profit, right? Part of it is building reserve for those times, those lean periods that are going to happen. There's a recession every 8 years, historically every 8 years on average. Of course, this is like part of the longest period since 2008-09 that we had without a recession. We were overdue. In that period, though, and every organization should have been just stockpiling money, prepare for some of those. You got to think about those things. These are things that are going to happen. We just don't know when all the time. All those things that outline, all the stressors, all the threats that can come upon an organization, you got to plan for that. That's more important of why you need to continually be developing your donor base. Because when you have a strong donor base that really believes in your mission and they feel connected to it because you and the board are reaching out to them on a regular basis, and you develop those strong relationships, those economic factors like a recession don't hit you as hard. I know a nonprofit, I'm not on the board, but I'm a friend. I really love what he does because he basically operates the ways we're talking about. And he grew last year. The last 2 years, he's grown by a significant amount, like 30%, I think it was in 01, 02, something like that, which was in a downturn like that. For a nonprofit, that's pretty much unheard of. And why? Because not only did he cultivate his donor base, but he was really tight on the mission. The organization runs tight. They're focused. They don't try to do too much, which is the death of a lot of nonprofits. They try to do too many things, too many services, provide too much, and they just stretch their resources thin. And therefore, they're very average at best on everything instead of being very excellent at one thing. So he's a great example of being tight on the mission, being focused on what they do, stay in their lane, and always be cultivating relationships. And you see the outcome of when the recession hit. So what happened was a lot of these people that pulled away from donating to some nonprofits funneled some of the resources to them because people are still giving. But when a recession hits, it's just as a consumer, when a recession hits, you're just a little bit more particular about where you spend your money or where you don't need your money. People are still going to give. Right. So don't just accept the fact that there's a recession and, oh, money's going to go down. Is number one is it's when you have to react to that, but proactively know that's going to happen. And then number one, get reserves. Number two is continue. That's what you have to be more intentional about, developing those relationships all the time and create that stickiness between you and a donor. And you'll see less of a downturn in your donor base, even during a recession. Or you might experience what my friend did, was you actually see an increase.
Yeah. And that's such an important point, because if you really develop a deep relationship with the donor, what they know is that in your brain, people think of their philanthropic relationships the same way they think about their family versus business, which is a different part of the brain. You're never going to say to your kid, like, you know what? I'm actually not going to be able to feed you right now because it's a recession. Let's switch tacks a little bit, because I know this is something you're very passionate about, which is organizational growth. What are the levers that you've seen that lead to not just growth, but sustainable, healthy growth? Because I think we've all seen situations where nonprofits get like that one big rent and then they expand, but it's not sustainable over time. Walk us through a framework for how we can think about growth.
Time and money are the two factors into running and growing an organization. It's the time you put in and the money you bring in and also use. So it's time and money issues with any organization, whether you're a for-profit or nonprofit. So you got to be very particular about, number one, you talk about time. The typical, especially the smaller nonprofits, they always talk about how much time they don't have, how much money they don't have, and how many resources they don't have. They're always talking about what they don't have.
But
they,
honestly, even the name nonprofit is a negative. It doesn't crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I hate that. I totally agree with you. I said that is the kiss of death of naming it, because it's in your DNA now, because you keep saying it. If you say something enough, you just believe it. And so that's why people think you can't make profit. You can't make money. Don't make money. Don't bring in income because it's nonprofit. I'm like, no, don't focus on what you don't have, but focus on what you do have. You do have some time and you do have some money. Now we just got to make sure we utilize it to the best of our ability. Be very efficient, be very productive. Just don't be busy. So with time, don't just be busy, because a lot of nonprofits are very busy and doing nothing, but be very specific about your time. Don't say yes to everything. We have big hearts as a nonprofit. So we have big hearts. We want to say yes to everything, just like I want to say yes to every board, right? But you start stretching yourself and then you become less and less effective. So I have one nonprofit, or a lot of the small nonprofits, they get pulled on to add an additional service or step out of lane. Like one nonprofit I'm on the board of is raising awareness for liver disease, and liver is in their organizational name. And then they got requested, or they saw some opportunities in different diseases to do their work. And even to this extent that they wanted to think about changing their name, so it's a little more generic, so not specific to liver disease. And I said, wait a second. Number one is the founder survived liver disease as a child, as a three-year-old, a rare form of liver disease that he should not have survived, but yet he is. And he's now a professional athlete, and he's using that platform, his experience in his platform, to raise awareness, to say that liver disease is not just for alcoholics and drug addicts, right? It can happen to anybody. Tight message, right? Experience totally makes sense. And also liver disease is one of those underrepresented diseases. As he started to launch his campaigns in liver disease, he was getting so much positive feedback. People saying, oh, thank you for doing this. Nobody's representing liver disease. No one like you is doing this. And it's on and on and on, right? Okay, we are in our lane. We're doing something. Yes, we're making an impact. It's something that no one's doing or doing well. And all of a sudden, they want to start to spread themselves out to other disease states. And I'm like, time out. Number one, you only have so much time, and we only have so much money. We can do all these things, but now we've got to spread all our time, money, and resources out across all these other things. And what are we really going to do? You leave people in the dust of people that say, hey, we want you. You're a champion and we're getting behind you. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to leave them in the dust.
Yeah. Let me ask this question, because it's coming up for me, which is, I agree with you. I think we have to really go deep, not broad. We have to really own the space that we're going to own. And I think there's a tension here. And so my question is, how do you know? Are you going deep on a particular issue, or are you going deep on an issue that like nobody else really cares about? I talk about the panda bears, just to be cheeky. I'm like, look, you could decide that like you want to pet the panda bears, and the panda bears are like the most important thing. But if nobody else agrees with you, if the market does not agree with you, how do you know if it's an ideal worth pursuing, or it's simply a question of the market needs more education?
Sometimes it's both. That market needs education and it's something worth pursuing. Even this liver disease issue is the average person, if they're not an alcoholic or a drug addict, they're not going to get tested for certain forms of HPV or whatever. There's all kinds of other non-alcoholic related liver diseases. There is education that needs to happen with the average person. Reinforcement, when you first start like testing the market in a for-profit, when you have a new product or something or service, you test the market. Right? And see if people are responding in a positive way. If not, then yeah, it's going to be a long sludge. If you really want to go into this and really educate the market, it's going to be a long sludge to do that. But if you're seeing these immediate responses, then okay, people just aren't problem aware or solution aware, but all of a sudden it resonates because maybe they had a son or daughter that was diagnosed recently. And then now all of a sudden that's, yeah, there weren't alcoholics or drug addicts either. And you're doing great work. And then, but all of a sudden you get this grassroots thing that keeps going, and they become even your donors or become ambassadors for the brand or the organization that helps spread the word as well. Because in fact, same organization, just surprisingly, had this lady reach out to us saying that her son died of liver disease. And in lieu of gifts, flowers, whatever, he said, just donate to this foundation. That was not only getting donors, but they're also educating people at the same time. So that's an example of you can be donating and also educating from your own donor base. And yeah, so we got pretty immediate feedback. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, we said, okay, let's go in. I don't think he was going to give up on it, but it just gave that extra energy and push to say, let's get going. And then when you hear these off stories of people we didn't know, they weren't donors of ours, supporters of ours, but all of a sudden he just knew about the foundation and just sends out this letter, hey, just donate to them.
Yeah. And so I think the important point here, which I, if I can unpack some of the things, is have an idea, but also be willing to test the idea. And if it seems like after some time that the idea is not getting traction, don't be so married to your idea that you go down with the ship. Because you might think that the panda bears need help or whatever, but if the market isn't telling you that is going to be a priority, to your point, it's going to be a long, slow sledge. Let's talk about time for a second, because this is really resonating for me as an ED. I always felt like I was so time strapped, like I don't know what. And yet, I think what's also true is I spent a lot of time doing things that were not effective and were not growing the organization. Can you give us any tips about how to organize one's time in the most efficient and high leverage way possible? Like, how do I know if I'm wasting time? Because everyone's busy, right? Like, I'm so busy, but are you actually moving the needle or are you just busy?
Yeah. So you got to use the term productive. Am I being productive? Always ask that question. I'm being productive because we know we're busy. Everybody's busy. That's a given. Everybody's busy. So you don't have to talk about how busy you are because everybody is, but ask yourself how productive you are. So how to do that is I just do a data dump. I do that for myself. Kaylee does it. We do it every once in a while. All of our clients, the first thing we do is just data dump. What are all the things that you do in your business? What are the top 2 to 3 things that you're best qualified to do that will move the needle? That's productive time. And most likely, that's the stuff you spend the least amount of time on or your most productive things, right? The rest, the other 95% on your list, now what do we do with that? You either figure out ways to automate that stuff to make it streamlined so it's faster and more efficient, or you delegate to others or hire a virtual assistant or something. Can you delegate it or do you eliminate it? Automate, delegate, or eliminate. And eliminate doesn't have to mean totally not do it, but at least minimize it or eliminate even for a season. Stop doing it. The first thing, identify those first 2 to 3 things. And then with that, you just have to figure, okay, when do I do these on a regular basis? How do I do this on a regular basis? And you're just going to make time. You pull out your calendar and come up with a blank calendar and just say, for me, Mondays, the whole day is just working on the business, all the most productive things I can do. And then Wednesday mornings is my outreach day. I guess you can call it sales, but it's, I don't have necessarily have specific appointments or anything set up. I just start reaching out to people. And it's not just potential clients or clients. It's actually friends, family, and then clients, potential clients. It's my relationship day, I call it, because our relationships suffer as we're building an organization. That's one way to stay grounded for self, is also just making sure I'm staying connected to my other relationships besides work stuff. And then Friday mornings is my finance morning, is when I go over the P&Ls and the balance sheets and that kind of stuff. I may be paying for things that I'm not even using or not even utilizing very well. And then you have to make these decisions every once in a while. Do I keep doing this or just stop it? Or is there something else I can replace for it? Or why are my margins getting a little bit smaller? Am I discounting my prices too much here? All these things, if you don't see it on paper or on the screen, you lose focus on what you're really doing. And sometimes you're paying out on things you shouldn't be paying out on. Like for me, there's that one day and then there's that Wednesday morning and Friday morning where there's some specific things that I do that I wouldn't do otherwise because I would just get caught up in doing. And those two other things, the relationship stuff and the finance stuff, are just very important to your organization.
Let me ask this question because I think this is an interesting one. As I work with mostly executive directors on fundraising, and I'm of the opinion, especially in small organizations, that executive directors are the main fundraiser, right? You are the main relationship person. You're the one people want to talk to, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, again, I don't want to cast too broad a net here, but what I have found is that founders in particular, when you ask them to list all the things that they're doing, the primary thing that they do is program stuff because they started the organization and they wanted to pet the panda bear, yada, yada, yada. What do you do if you look at this list of stuff and you're like, okay, I know that the thing I should be doing is the fundraising, the marketing, the outreach, but it's A, not what I want to be doing, or B, not what I'm skilled at doing. Like, I'm not the best person to do it. What do you do then? Do you delegate or do you upskill? What's the strategy there?
Yeah, long term, you may want to delegate or hire and train a fundraiser and all that, but in the short term, yes, the executive director still has to do it. Because if you don't have already someone skilled at doing it, you still got to train them up. which means guess what? You need to take them out and show them how to do it. You can't just teach it in the classroom, right? You got to go out and build relationships because you're the one that has the relationships. Number one, I always start with asking some questions. If you don't do it, who's going to do it well? And if nobody's doing it, what are the things you want to accomplish with your organization and what's it going to take? The money is... You can't get around it, right? Unless you cut something else or whatever. But at the end of the day, if you want to build and grow this organization the way you envision it, then what needs to happen, right? And even if we do say we do want to hire a fundraising person, in the meantime, you still need to do it because you have the best relationship. Like you said, totally agree. And so don't think about fundraising as sales. Yes, it's not comfortable. I'm an introvert, but I spent 20 years in sales and I was pretty good at it. I won some awards, some trips, national awards. And so when it comes to you're not good at it, I don't believe everybody can be good at fundraising. It's just a matter of tapping into how you do relationships. Because people have like in sales, and in fundraising, have this idea of what kind of person it takes to fundraiser. It has to be this energetic, very charismatic person that's going to go out and connect with people and right away and get them to open their wallet right away, right? Very charismatic and sell them into anything. But some of the best fundraisers and salespeople that I know are actually introverts because introverts listen more than talk. Because believe it or not, you'll sell more or get more donations by talking less and listening more.
100% agree.
Sell the mission.
I don't know, and maybe this is something that you found in your business, but I'm trying to ditch the pitch. I don't know who told fundraisers that this was a good idea. Really? Like, I have never donated to anything or bought anything on the basis of a pitch. Like, come on. Like, I've bought on the basis of someone helping me to solve a problem I have. Sure. I've bought on the basis of someone like connecting with me and be like, hey, I can really help you. Yes, 100%. A pitch? Forget about it. Also, yeah. It feels sleazy. To get back to your point, I want everyone to hear this. If you are an ED and you assess that you are not spending enough time on fundraising and you either do not want to, are not willing to, or aren't willing to invest time and money and resources into either training someone or getting the skills yourself, then perhaps I would suggest that you might want to consider, are you the right person to lead the organization? I know that's harsh, but I'm going to die on that hill.
Sometimes you got to make these tough decisions for sure. You got to question everything, basically, is what I say. But also in your current position, whether you think can or can't be a good fundraiser, especially for those that think they can't be, you have the capability. Everybody has an ability to develop some kind of relationships. Getting people to donate is not about selling and, as you say, pitching them. It's really about cultivating a relationship. And not everybody you talk to is going to be a donor. And you need to accept that too.
Yeah. When we think about organizations that grow, companies or nonprofits or whatever, the company, the organization needs different things at different times from its leader, right? It's helpful to think about seasons of growth. And it could be that you were the right person at the startup portion. In order to be the person at the sustainability portion, you're either going to have to up-level yourself and or maybe accept that you don't want to up-level yourself and you find someone else to do it. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the responding to the different demands of a growing organization at different stages of growth.
That's a great question. In a business context, it's, are you a starter or a builder? Entrepreneurs are like those serial entrepreneurs. They're great starters. They're very bad builders. They can get people energized and get going. But as far as sustainability and building an organization, putting all the right people and processes in place, that's a builder. You need a builder. And so either as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, right, of the business, you start, but then you have to be very intentional about bringing in a president to build, or you let the new CEO build. That's a great question because it's very relevant to any organization. Is you got to understand what your skill set is. Are you a starter or a builder? And the starter can maintain CEO position because they're the visionary, but you got to make sure you bring a build place. Otherwise, this thing ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, it's so good. When I heard the visionary integrator model, I was like, oh, I am a natural visionary. I'm a starter. I will start stuff. But like when it comes to the processes and systems, I'm like, I'll also take care of that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But what really sapped my energy was trying to be a builder. And I could do it if I forced myself to do it, but it didn't really come naturally to me. What comes naturally to me is to be a starter. Okay, yeah. Robert, this has been so good. Anything else that we should know as we're listening to you and we're like, I want to grow, I want to be smart about it, I want to be intentional. Anything that you would advise that we haven't touched on yet?
Have a good board. And be very intentional about how you select your board. Because number one is, because I can go on, there's all kinds of stuff I say what you should do. But at the end of the day, right, as executive director, what we just talked about is you have a specific skill set that's good for your organization, but you don't want to try and do everything. And when you're wearing multiple hats, then yes, the organization is not going to go too far. right? You got to be very tight on what you do and then build around you. And part of that is the board. Even if you don't have the resources to hire a team right now, but everybody can have a board. And in the beginning stages, you might have a more active board where they are doing and be participating in the fundraising, right? That's one thing I think board members should be part of anyway, is how can the boards be a little bit more active in the fundraising? But also beyond that is surround yourself with a marketer, a legal person, an HR person, right? Think about what an organization needs and build your board with people that have those skill sets. Because as you grow, you're going to need people to talk to and say, hey, how do I do this? Because that's not you. You just have the mission and the heart to do this thing, but you're not trained in HR or legal or marketing and all that. And that's fine. We don't need you to be the expert in all that, but surround yourself with good people to be able to help you as you're building an organization, and be okay with being challenged. We have had some very difficult discussions in our board meetings with the founders, really uncomfortable ones. But at the end of the day, it was needed and it was healthy for the organization, because you just don't want to surround yourself with a board of people that just said, yes. You don't want to surround yourself with yes people. Yes, do this. Yes, do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen boards like, yes, do that. I'm like, wait, tighten out. So be okay with being challenged, because that is going to sharpen you and make your organization better. So you don't want to surround yourself with homogeneous people. You want a heterogeneous mix of people.
I just want to pause there for a second, because I think the question is, what does an organization need is really important. And I find this a lot with founders. I think sometimes founders get their ego really mixed up in the organization. And so it becomes about what's best for me as a person versus what's best for the organization, particularly if they feel like the organization is, I hear this so much, this is my baby. No, it's not, right? Like, you don't own this. This is bigger than you. Having the recognition and enough self-awareness to realize that we are in service to a mission. And if the thing that is right for the organization may not be for you to be at the head of it, like, that's okay too, which is hard, but sometimes necessary. All right, Robert, this has been really fun. Any last thoughts as we wrap up here? Where can folks find you?
I know you guys, all of you founders, have a great heart and a big vision. I'd say if there's one takeaway right now today, is to start being intentional about your time and who you surround yourself with the board. Get very specific about the kind of needs that you have. What kind of support do you need in your circle, and talking about your board? And that'll help, you know, how you use your time, and then get that board mix. MarriedEntrepreneur.co is our main website. That's where you can get everything. I know we're talking to nonprofits, but we've got a download even our book, Tandem, The Married Entrepreneurs for Greater Work-Life Balance. Everything applies, because it talks about how do you balance it all. You got this mission, this organization that you're married to, right? But you don't want that to be the mistress in your actual real marriage. And so
hilarious.
You want to have some balance in your life. And also there is aspect of what we talk about. How do you grow an organization? How do you utilize your time and your money? And all that. And all those things apply to building a healthy organization and just building a healthier life. Yeah, and just go to our website, marriedentrepreneur.co. And you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook too, at Power Couples by Design.
Fantastic. We'll make sure to put all of that information in the show notes. Robert, thank you so much for your time. This has been really fun.
Yeah, this was a blast. Thanks. Have a really good time.
Thanks so much. Take care, everyone. And if you like this, feel free to give me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts.